I couldn't walk, talk, think, nothing. Maybe there was a little drool. Doug Thaler. After the last U.S. date, everybody was just fucked up on blow and alcohol. Tommy took a bunch of downers at about 8 or 9 in the morning, and Rich Fisher had to wheel him onto the noon flight back to L.A. in a wheelchair. Some horrified guy in first class nearly shit his pants when they started to plop Tommy, semi-conscious, into the seat next to him. The stewardess wisely positioned Tommy in a lone first-class seat by himself. It was about the only time on that tour that Tommy was more of a mess than Nicky.
Lyric, Save Our Souls. It's been the hard road, edge of an overdose. No matter how high, you're still too low. I've been the dancer, the wicked romancer. It's a never-ending nightmare, edge of disaster. December 1987. Van Nuys, 1:50 p.m., December 1st, 1987. Abdul's coming over while Karen is at work. I feel so burnt out, ripped and torn from the tour right now, and I need a break from reality. Hence, Abdul. I'm so tired of being tired, I feel like I'm vanishing into a ghost right before the world's eyes. I really don't think the office knows how brittle we've become. Karen doesn't know that I know she's a spy. I must be careful to have Abdul come at the right times. His appearance is a dead giveaway. Looks like a decaying rat, even more so than me. Karen could see him coming a mile off because he looks like junk. Karen is a girl who's blind as a bat to dealers, but even a bat could see he's bad news. I wonder how the guys are doing. I know whenever a tour ends, I feel like a stranger in my own home. Without room service, it's hard to even figure out how to eat. Gate just buzzed. I gotta go. December 2nd, 1987, Van Nuys, 3:45 p.m. Just laid around yesterday feeling nothing, no remorse, no celebration. Actually, I'm lying. I'm feeling hatred, but for whom I've forgotten. Does it really matter anymore? Maybe not. The sky is gray outside today, and it makes me feel safe, like I'm under a huge down comforter and I'm drifting off to sleep. Bought $5,000 worth of dope yesterday because I don't want to see Abdul every day for a few reasons. I don't think I can face seeing anybody right now because I'm on the verge of having a human contact breakdown. The tour has left me completely without personality. Also, Karen is keeping an eye on me, and the visitors will set off red flags. I will venture from my bedroom soon, but for now, I am praying the clouds don't lift. December 3rd, 1987, Van Nuys, 4:20 p.m. Been shooting dope 4 or 5 times a day. The good news is, I won't have bad tracks if I stay on track. There's a cool lyric. It feels so good not to feel. My nerves have been like live wires for months and months. People, they just wear you down. They get in close, look in your eyes, say stupid shit. You have to restrain yourself or come off as a heartbreak to them, especially if you're their hero. Mostly, Vince has the most impact on my sanity. I may be an asshole. Tommy may be self-centered. Mick may be a recluse and insane, but Vince is a drama queen, and that wears you down. Little episode by episode temper tantrums. When you're brittle, it doesn't take an earthquake to wear you down. Repeated tremors do the job just fine. Karen is coming home from Doc's office in a few hours. I guess I need to use the old junky fave excuse that I think I'm coming down with something, maybe the flu. I just can't get out of bed. December 5th, 1987, Van Nuys, 2:30 a.m. It's official. I feel strung out again. I guess I knew it all along. December 6th, 1987, Van Nuys, 2:05 p.m. Today would have been Nona's birthday. I feel too ashamed to call Tom and ask how he's doing. I'm sure he's sitting somewhere with a broken heart, too. So I sit here and shoot dope in my bedroom alone, watching TV, watching life pass me by. I went from a kid with a dream to a loser, a hero to a zero. I hope she can't see me now, because who I've turned out to be would break her heart. I was a good kid. She loved me. I guess I didn't love myself enough, and now that I'm unraveling, I must be a true disappointment. I'd say I'll see her soon, but I know, as you do, Diary, there's a heaven. It's not where I'll be going. Lyric, Nona. Nona, I'm out of my head without you. December 7th, 1987, Van Nuys, midnight. I'm heading down a road I know I shouldn't be going, but I can't seem to find the brakes. I'm not sure I want to find them. Abdul told me today he's taken to selling blow to a select few since his junk business isn't doing so good. I told him I was enjoying not having to worry about daily deliveries since I bought quantity from him, and I would take 1 ounce if he could get some pure pink. He said he has a lead to get it before it gets cut. I'd have to pay extra so he didn't have to step on it, and I'm fine with that. I have more money than I can ever spend, so what's an extra $500 to me? I don't want to start cooking and all that hassle, plus Karen is still watching me like a hawk. I know the minute she walks into the office, it's always the same. How's Nikki? I've even taken to calling the office before I shoot up to throw everybody off my track. Wow, another song title. Abdul said he'd bring me 100 fresh rigs when he comes over. I'm running low, and you triple your shots with coke. Now the dilemma. Do I shoot so I don't get caught? And when I go into Japan, how do I hide the tracks? I have to tell you, I don't feel like I'll ever be off this shit, and I'm settling into being okay with that. If I could just fade away, I might be the happiest I've ever been. Pete stopped by. We shared a shot. He's strung out again, too.
Karen Dumont. Doc and Doug liked the fact that I was staying at Nikki's because they hoped it would be grounding for him, but they never asked me to spy on him. I'd tell him that we had a good weekend, but that was pretty much it. Nikki wasn't straight, but he hit it well because he knew I can't handle being around anyone drugged out of their mind, and I would have just taken a huff. There was a dealer who would come late at night and ring the gate bell, and I would answer and tell him to go away. Then Nikki and I would fight about it. If I was there, they wouldn't get in, so I guess Nikki had to plan other visits.
December 8th, 1987. Van Nuys, 7:30 p.m. Karen asked me why when I go to the store, I only buy plastic lemons and ice cream. I told her I use the lemons in my tea after she goes to work, and the ice cream, I just have a sweet tooth lately. I haven't really eaten food in a week. Junk is like that. So Karen asked to go to the store and buy real food, which I never eat. I tell her I eat when she's at work. I'm getting so thin it's hard to find clothes to fit in my closet. Of course, they say you can never be too thin or too rich. I used to use the plastic lemons to cook up my Persian heroin with. You can use real lemons, but they're a real hassle. I would have garbage bags of used plastic lemons in my bedroom, and the maid would ask if she could throw them away, and I'd say no. Nothing is worse for a junkie who's using Persian than running out of lemon for your dope, other than running out of dope. I remember going into the market with a shopping cart and wandering up and down the aisles. I must have spent hours in there and only bought lemons and ice cream. What a beautiful picture of decay I must have been to all the mothers doing their weekly family shopping. December 11th, 1987, Van Nuys, 3:10 p.m. I just woke up and realized today's my birthday. I ran to the machine to check it. No messages. Nobody's called to wish me a happy birthday. No presents, no cards, nothing nice. Wake up junk sick with a head full of sorrow. I have to go to Japan tomorrow, and I know I'm going to kick on the plane, just like I did in 1985. Karen knows something is up, but as with all things junky, I'm good at hiding it. My arms, on the other hand, tell a torrid tale. Thank God it's December, because if it was summer, it would be highly suspect wearing a long-sleeve shirt and a leather jacket all the time. I haven't had sex since the tour. I've lost all drive or interest. 5 p.m. Abdul came by. He gave me a balloon of high-grade china for my birthday. He said if I wanted, he could get me a great price if I bought bulk like I did the Persian. I'm not sure if this is what you'd call a conventional birthday gift, but considering it's my only one, I'll take it. I've yet to unpack from the U.S. leg of the tour, so I'm going to dump my clothes out and grab some clean clothes so I'm ready to go tomorrow. I feel sorry for my maid. She hasn't been in my bedroom in almost 2 weeks. It smells like death in here. I got to dispose of everything before I leave. I know Karen will snoop. Happy birthday. 7 p.m. Just got back from the store. I need a few things for my trip to Japan. Karen said I should take a shower because I smell. I'll try, but I'm so strung out that I just don't give a fuck anymore. This is sad, but it's my destiny. December 12, 1987, on the plane to Tokyo, 5 p.m. I brought a small amount of dope to snort, but I ran out 6 hours or so ago. I'm going into a kick. Everybody keeps saying how much weight I've lost. I told them I was dieting and stopped drinking. At least the drinking part is true, because junkies hate alcohol. But right about now, I need a shot, and Jack is all there is. I got a stash of Valium to help, but even that can't remove this pain. Fuck, I'm feeling like shit, sweating up a storm. It's amazing what a difference 12 days can make in your life. I went from completely drunk and coked out to strung out again. This is my second trip to Japan on a kick. It's fucked but good, because one thing I know is you can't get junk in Japan. At least I haven't ever been able to. Thank God.
Doc McGee. While Motley was in Japan, they basically tortured poor Mr. Udo, the promoter, who is the nicest man on the planet. When we got to Tokyo, they found some pot in Tommy's drum case, so the cops took all our equipment. Tommy didn't have a clue how serious that could be. He just said, "Dude, what's a little pot?" Motley just didn't understand or care that in Japan there was a very low tolerance for any kind of disturbance. When we got to the hotel, Tommy dropped a wine bottle out of a 10-story window and couldn't figure out why that might have been a big deal.
Rainbow Hall, Nagoya, Japan, December 13th, 1987. Backstage, 5 p.m. Getting ready to go on stage. I'm so sick. I keep to my lie that I must have the flu, but everybody knows the truth. It's an unspoken truth. I'm going to go out, sweat some of this poison out. I'm very jet-lagged and feeling depressed. Trying to smile and be up, but to be honest, this is the worst it's ever been. But I knew what I was getting into. Festival Hall, Osaka, Japan, December 14th, 1987. Hotel, Nagoya, 2 a.m. Still awake, can't sleep. My legs are cramping so bad. And the Valium isn't doing much good. Everybody got smashed and fucked these little Japanese girls. Couldn't fuck if I wanted to. You know what's not glamorous? Throwing up and shitting at the same time during junk withdrawal. Something's not going to get in the toilet bowl. Can you imagine the look on the sweet little Japanese housekeeping ladies' faces? On the bullet train to Osaka, 2 p.m. Didn't get much sleep. Mostly on and off. I'm almost over the kick. Now it's just the Joneses. Thank God for pills. I'm on the bullet train. These fans are amazing. It's like the Beatles over here. It's basically a riot, all screaming, "Nikki, Tommy, Nikki, Tommy." They seem to love me and T-Bone here for some strange reason. I would think it would be Vince with his blonde hair and California cool. He's perfect to be idolized here. The sick thing is, they keep saying, "Oh, Nikki-san," We're so sorry you have flu. Fucking lies travel fast. I'm gonna try to sleep. 3 p.m. Can't sleep. 4:30 p.m. Just got to Osaka. Last night's show was fucking crazy. I can't believe it. The band seemed to be in love again. But fucking Amy is still with Mick like she's his girlfriend or something. Fucking whore. Soundcheck time. December 15th, 1987. Day off. Hotel, Tokyo, 5 a.m. Just got out of jail. We'll write later. Hotel, 11:45 a.m. Well, I feel like shit. Not from last night's event, but from my head killing me. So let me see if I can piece last night together. We played a show, got on the bullet train, coming back to Tokyo. Me and Tommy started drinking a lot. We were pouring drinks on Amy and starting trouble. Then I sort of blacked out. I guess I threw a Jack Daniels bottle at some Japanese or something. I sort of remember being in jail and Doc and Mr. Udo being there. I guess I'll make some calls and see who's mad and who thinks it's funny. First, some shitty runny eggs. Eating eggs in Japan is like committing Harry Carey.
Tommy Lee. Dude, we were just being an ugly American drunk fucking rock band on that bullet train. We looked like fucking freaks. We were pouring JD on Amy. Then Nikki thought somebody was looking at him wrong, so he just cocked the Jack bottle and heaved it across the passenger car. It smashed against the wall, and glass and whiskey went all over this fucking Japanese businessman. Then we pulled into the station, and it was lined up with police officers. The Japanese guy pointed Nikki out, and they took him to jail. I think he was even doing blow in the holding pen area. He had it hidden in his sock.
Mick Mars. I still think Nikki threw the bottle down the bullet train because of me and Amy. He had thrown a load of rice and crap all over our seats and down our necks and then suddenly came at us all pinned. His face had turned about 15 shades of red with anger. He started yelling at me and was going to hit me with the JD bottle. But at the last second he spun around and threw it down the end of the train and it smashed all over a bunch of people at the front.
Vince Neil. Nikki and Tommy were completely out of control on the bullet train and I was completely embarrassed by it. They were just being awful to the Japanese people, yelling, "Fuck you, you lost the war," to these 60-year-old businessmen who didn't know who Motley Crue was. They were just on their way home from work and had these fucking psychos yelling and throwing bottles of JD at them when they probably didn't even understand English. It was totally unacceptable. When Nikki got arrested, I just said to Mick, "Fuck these guys. Let's not get involved with this." I didn't give a shit if Nikki went to jail and stayed there. I just thought, you know what? You've dug your own grave. Doc McGee. When we arrived in Tokyo, there were 100 police waiting to arrest Nikki. Tommy wanted to fight them and kept yelling for them to arrest him too. I told the police chief, "Look, I'm the manager. Can we talk about this?" And he said, "You the manager? Under arrest." So they dragged Nikki and me away. We were sitting in the cells, and if I could have uncuffed my hands, I would have beaten the shit out of him. Nikki was so far out of it, he was just saying to me, "Dude, shall I show them my tattoos?" Mr. Udo had to come to the police station at 4 o'clock in the morning, and we had to sign an apology note for the guy who had been hit with the bottle.
I remember Fred Saunders telling me that when I was in jail in Tokyo, I asked the police captain, "If my balls were on your chin, where would my dick be?" The police captain asked what I had said, and the translator told him that I had said I was very sorry and didn't mean any disrespect. I guess that was the Motley Crue way. Somebody was always bailing me out of trouble. Budokan, Tokyo, Japan, Show 1. December 16th, 1987, Hotel, Tokyo, 2 p.m. Lately, I've been slipping deeper into thoughts of why. I don't know why, I'm just slipping deeper. Some days I don't know how much longer I can hold on, or why I would even want to. You'd think I'd be excited to be selling out 3 nights at the Budokan, but I'm rotting inside, and all I smell is my putrid past. It haunts me. Maybe to you it would seem like a surface burn, but the pain is too deep for surgery. P.S. I'm so lonely, I called Vanity. It must have been the cocaine I got from the Yakuza. P.P.S. Fucking Tommy pisses me off. He says I punched him in the face last night. I fucking should have. Vince almost got shot by a Yakuza. Interesting evening. Nobody in the band is talking to each other. Lovely. Fucking lovely. Budokan, Tokyo, Japan. Show 2. December 17th, 1987. Hotel, Tokyo, noon. Another show last night, like I do anything else. We got off stage early as usual here in Japan. I went straight into a blackout drunk. I can't seem to stay sober because my guts are trying to kill me. I know I'm dying from depression. I feel like a lost soul, like the only person left on earth. If I died, would anybody cry? It seems to me by putting myself out of my misery, I'd be killing two birds with one stone. Rich Fisher said I called the hotel front desk and complained about the fans banging on my window last night. Fuck. I'm on the 26th floor. I'm losing it, unraveling at the seams. And this is news? P.S. I have press today, but everybody can fuck off. I'm not showing up. Budokan, Tokyo, Japan, Show 3, December 18th, 1987. Backstage, 10 p.m. Just got off stage. Last show of the year. I don't want to be on the road, and I don't want to go home. If I go home, I get strung out again. I'm going to go to Bangkok to explore. I got $50,000 of cash coming from the accountant, and everybody's telling me no. I'm so sick of all these assholes. Let me live or die my way. I know I'm your meal ticket, but haven't you milked it enough? If I don't come back, you'll make millions on the dead rock star merchandise. I'm done. I'm fried. I don't care. My heart is broken from my childhood. I'm worn to the bone from being driven like a slave. I've lost my will to do anything but fade, please. December 19th, 1987. Hotel, Tokyo, 11 a.m. Well, today I was shot down in flames. Doc and everybody demanded I don't go to Bangkok and said in exchange Doc and Mr. Udo would go to Hong Kong with me. I just don't want to go home, so this is better than nothing. But they only gave me $15,000 in cash. I sometimes wonder why I let them lead me by a ring in my nose like a cow on its way to slaughter. I have every intention of ditching Doc and Mr. Udo, but I'll play like I'm excited to go for now. I have a plane to catch. Can't find my clothes, so better figure out what happened last night. I'm so bummed. It's Christmas, and I don't have a reason to go home. Is there anybody out there, or am I going to be a rock and roll casualty? Is death an option, or am I a fucking martyr? Why am I alive? Why do I care? What do I care about? Am I... Fuck me. I hate me. Fuck off and die already. Lyric. Anybody out there? I'm gonna die. You're gonna die. We've gotta live for tonight, cause we're running out of time. Looking for a lover? Let me ask you. Is anybody out there?
Karen Dumont. Doc McGee was so depressed and embarrassed about Nikki in Japan because Doc really respected Mr. Udo and saw him as a friend as well as a business partner. Doc offered to take Mr. Udo to Hong Kong to make amends, and they were talking about it when Nikki came wandering over and said, "Hong Kong? That sounds great. I'd love to come." Mr. Udo, being so polite, said, "Please come with us." Doc was just dying of shame.
Tommy Lee. I actually thought deciding to go to Hong Kong was one of Nikki's more sober moments. He didn't want to go home because that meant the party was over, and he told me he wanted to buy some furniture for his home. He seemed really sincere about wanting to go to Hong Kong and get amazing deals on furniture. Vince Neil. When Nikki announced he wasn't coming back to LA but was going to Hong Kong, I couldn't have cared less. I didn't give it a second thought, just said, "Fine, have a nice time, bye."
We weren't close in any way, and I wanted to keep my distance from him because he was fucking bad news.
On a plane to Hong Kong, 4 p.m. Mr. Udo just said to me, "Nicky-san, you're going to die if you don't stop." He said he told the same thing to Tommy Bolin, and Tommy didn't listen. He died a few days later. Udo looked like he was going to cry. It made me feel loved, more than my father ever did. Hotel, Hong Kong, 7:20 p.m. Doc, Mr. Udo, and me are going to go to a Chinese restaurant that Mr. Udo says is one of the best in the world. I haven't eaten in a few days. I'm too weak to attempt to go out afterwards. When I told Doc, he breathed a sigh of relief. Oh, Doc, you're not getting off that easy. Tomorrow is just around the corner, and hell only a few feet away. Sounds poetic, doesn't it? Right? Off to dinner. P.S. I smell so bad. I haven't showered since L.A. I can see people actually look repulsed when they get a whiff of me. Sometimes I stand next to people just to fuck with them. I didn't bring any clothes with me. Just cash. Fuck, what else do I need? December 20th, 1987. Hotel, Hong Kong, 11 a.m. I have an interpreter, Lee, meeting me in an hour, and I'm going to buy some antiques for the house. Doc said he will join me. I'm feeling good since I slept, but I still don't have any interest in a shower or food. I have a feeling of relief at being away from everybody. If I could just disappear into some place like this, maybe I could find myself. My life is loud. Everywhere I go, people are talking to me, but nothing is as loud as the screams in my head. They are far off, distant, and I can't make out the words. I've come to realize it's most likely the drugs. They're always calling me. Right now, I've given up. I really don't care anymore. They win. To be honest, my life has been an abortion, or at least it should have been. If being a rock star is an accomplishment, I've failed miserably, and I feel miserable. Be careful what you wish for, or as they say, whoever they are, I commend them. They were right. Rotting is painful. Isn't there an easier way? To go shopping for antiques, not wondering if you will be alive at Christmas, is about as empty as you can feel. It's like trying to enjoy the last cigarette before your execution. Hotel, 5 p.m. Just got back. Lee, a girl, looked horrified when she saw me. Think the tangles in my hair and the days of growth on my face add to my homeless look. Anyway, I bought a beautiful Chinese table for my dining room, cherry wood, pearl cherry blossom. Quite the cliche, to be honest, but I like it. Ordered some food, and I'm getting ready to go out tonight. 9 p.m. Just woke up, passed out face down on the bed with a bottle of Jack and a steak next to me. I guess they just brought my room service in. I wonder what they thought. December 21st, 1987, Hotel, Hong Kong, 1 p.m. Well, last night was an interesting evening, an exercise in excess. Mr. Udo, Doc, and myself had a few drinks in the bar and went off to a club that's actually a brothel. There were two ballrooms, two bands playing. I can't believe it. I'm in Hong Kong, and I heard a band play a Motley Crue song in a whorehouse. We were escorted, no pun intended, to a private booth where we had four bottles of Cristal, two bottles of Jack, one bottle of vodka, and huge plates of food. This is one of those things I have to write down. So this is how it worked. There were beautiful girls walking around with number tags on them. You tell the madam what number you want, and any special requests. A white dress, black boots, or anything that takes your fancy. In other words, they are there to please on every level. At one point, I noticed number 800. Fucking 800 girls to pick from. I picked about eight numbers, and the evening began. They will take you in the back, but for a few extra American dollars, they will meet you at your hotel, so I remember asking the madam if I could have a girl in a nun's habit were in army boots and seeing Doc wince. He probably knew this was just the tip of the iceberg. Well, I got the nun outfit organized, but they had no army or, more importantly, Nazi boots to add to the mix. The other girls were run-of-the-mill whores, perfect as imperfection could be. My real intention was to find drugs, and lo and behold, after all, isn't that what strippers and whores are really for? A gram of junk is $100. Beats the $500 I pay at home. So I got a gram of coke, quarter of China white, easy to sniff. As the evening wore on, I decided to grab the girls, go back to the hotel, but not before I sent a bunch of girls to Mr. Udo's room. Funny how when I do nice things, I always seem to step in shit. Doc called this morning saying Mr. Udo was insulted. Fucking hell. Just when I thought things were going good. Well, the kicker to the story is I woke up with all my clothes on and all my money and drugs gone. I have no idea what happened, and I guess I don't care. Doc nervously asked me to go back to L.A. This is my chance to ditch the fucking no-fun police, so I agreed. Good news, we're on different flights, so I ain't gonna make my flight. Once Doc and Mr. Udo are in the air, I'm grabbing Lee, and I'm heading out.
Doc McGee. Nikki sent prostitutes to my door and to Mr. Udo's door. They turned up in the middle of the night. As a parting joke, when I left the club, I'd said to Nikki, "Don't send us any girls in Nazi helmets and Gestapo boots." And he must have thought I meant it, because they turned up in helmets but no boots. As I opened my door to them, Mr. Udo called me and said, "Nikki has sent three girls to my room." Poor Udo was out of his mind. I had to do a buyout and give the women some money just to go away.
2:30 p.m. I have a 9 p.m. flight tonight. Not that I'll be catching it. Doc has a 6 p.m. Mr. Udo is leaving now. I need to find a bank. Don't have any cash, but at least those fucking whores didn't steal my credit cards. I guess I should call home. I haven't called in weeks. 7 p.m. I'm alone. It's not nice. Waves of depression come over me, then anger, then disinterest. I'm already drunk, I guess, if half a bottle of Jack is drunk. I actually don't feel anything, but maybe that's just me. I'm going out tonight to walk around. I don't have any plans. I leave tomorrow, and I'm sure Doc will have a fucking coronary when he finds out I didn't make my flight. I told Lee not to tell anybody, or I'd have to kill her. Then I smiled. She didn't. I put a call into Abdul. He's going to meet me at LAX tomorrow. I'm having a limo pick him up, and I told him to bring a pre-cooked Persian shot with him. I can't wait. My mouth is watering. At least it shuts up the screams. December 22nd, 1987, Hotel, Hong Kong, 4 a.m. I've been back a few hours, bored, nothing happened. I think Lee was steering me away from anything that would put her job on the line. The only thing of interest was I was walking down a street, and I looked down the alley and saw an old guy sitting with one single light on next to steam rising out of a gutter. I asked Lee what it was, and she said it was a fortune teller. So I said, "Cool, let's go talk to him." We walked down the street and up to the old man, who looked at me, and then at Lee, and then back at me. He sort of looked freaked out. That's okay, I'm used to it, but I didn't expect what happened next. They started chattering in Chinese back and forth, and then Lee announced he didn't want to do my fortune. I said, "Look, isn't that his job?" She said that I wouldn't like what he had to tell me. I said I would, and he slowly reached for my dirty hand and looked at my eyes and spoke to Lee. She said, "He says if you don't change your ways, you won't live until the end of the year." I said to tell him thank you. That gives me a week longer than I expected. He looked at me, old and tired, and said three or four words softly to Lee. She said he was serious. I said thank you and asked Lee if those guys were just part of the tourist traps in Hong Kong. She looked sad and said, "Nikki, they are never wrong." Then, she said, "Maybe we can go back to the hotel. You have an early flight. I agreed, if only out of boredom. Good night. On the plane to L.A., noon. I'm on the plane. We just took off. I feel good. Slept well. Took a shower, but didn't have a comb to get the knots out of my hair, so I think I probably look even worse. These leather pants feel really slimy. I mean, it's worse to be clean in dirty clothes. It's like wearing a homeless person's clothes. I have a blanket on my legs to cover up the odor. I had breakfast and coffee, almost like a normal person. I have a couple halcyons in my jacket somewhere. I think I'll sleep all the way to L.A. 5 p.m. I'm not sure what day it is. Is it the 23rd or still the 22nd? But I just got asked to raise my tray up. We're landing in L.A. I hope Abdul is here. I left messages for Robin and Slash asking them if they wanted to go out. I forgot to call Karen. In Hong Kong, I noticed my ribs were sticking out, but also my face is puffy and yellow. I have some weird scabs on my legs and a rash on my chest and arms. I'm sure it's just from not showering. I've seen it before. Okay, buckle up. We're descending into hell. Satan is home. Van Nuys, 7 p.m. Home sweet home. Wow. It is nice to get out of those leather pants. I took another shower and got the rat's nest out of my hair. I feel great. Abdul gave me a 10cc shot as soon as I got into the limo. I feel great. This is what I've been missing. I got a message from Robin and Slash. We're all going to go to the cat house tonight. King's got some Persian, but no needles, so I'm going to go up to his house in the hills to chase the dragon and then off to the Franklin Plaza Hotel to pick up Slash. I kept the limo. 9 p.m. Karen won't go out. She said she has to work. I asked her if Doc knew that I didn't come home from Hong Kong when I was supposed to, and she didn't think so. I guess threatening the interpreter's life worked. It always does. Huh. I just realized it's Christmas. I haven't gotten anything for anybody. Karen got a Christmas tree, though, and finally got rid of last year's one. I could always give people the presents that I got last year that I haven't opened. Lyric. Courtesy call. This is just a courtesy call. This is just a matter of policy. This is just an act of kindness to let you know that your time is up. December 23rd, 1987, Van Nuys, 9:30 a.m. Unraveling, unsure, undetermined, unnecessary, this is what my life has boiled down to. I either have to stop or die. I can't straddle this fence any longer. I have taken into my lungs the longest breath of hell, and I'm still here. Maybe there is a God. Maybe, just maybe, there is such a lifeline. Something happened last night. Good. I died. Sounds insane, doesn't it? I feel different today. I think for the first time in my life, I feel hopeful. I can't remember ever feeling happy, but I feel something has snapped. I feel, I don't know. Last night was not unlike many nights for me, driving towards hell, hoping to be welcomed into death's arms or simply to kill the pain and fill the hole of emptiness inside. I'm too weak and too sick to write the whole evening down. I'll try later. Here's the short version. Picked up Slash, his girlfriend Sally, Steven Adler, and Robin. We went to the cat house, lots of coke, alcohol, pills. Don't remember much. At some point, the usual blackouts. Then we went back to Slash's hotel to get some junk. I was too wasted, and I let this cat shoot me up. I turned blue on the spot. This is what they tell me. Steven and Sally came in and tried to revive me. I'm sure all the usual drama behind a junkie dying in your place happened at that point. But then, something that's never happened before. I couldn't come back. The ambulance was called, and I was well on my way to getting out of my skin. I saw something. Fuck. Okay, here we go. I was on the gurney, the sheets over my head, and I saw something. There was my limo, There were people crying. There was an ambulance. There was a body with a sheet over it being loaded into the ambulance. It was me. I saw it all. I was up above it all. I couldn't know this if I was dead. I don't understand, but something feels different in me. I'm just going to have to write later. I need to collect my thoughts.
Sally McLaughlin. I'm originally from Scotland, but moved to America in 1987 because I was dating Slash. When I arrived, I went straight out on the road with Guns N' Roses, supporting Motley Crue. Then Guns went straight on to Alice Cooper's tour. So December 22nd, 1987 was my first day in Los Angeles. Slash and I were staying in the Franklin Plaza, and Nikki called up Slash and came over. Nikki, Slash, Robin Crosby and I went to Cat House in Nikki's limo and were there for hours. The boys kept running off to the limo to do coke and then coming back to the club. The last time they did it, they never came back for me, so I had to walk back to Franklin Plaza on my own. I was steaming.
Slash, I can't remember too much about it. Nikki had asked me at the Cat House if I knew where he could get dope. A friend of mine had just become a junkie, so we called him and all went back to Franklin Plaza. I was so screaming drunk that I couldn't even find the floor to fall on. My friend turned Nikki on, but I didn't even notice.
Sally McLaughlin. Guns had two suites at the Franklin. Slash was in one, and Steven Adler was in the other. I came storming into our suite, furious, and Nikki said, "Uh-oh, we better leave them alone for a while." Nikki and Steven went to Steven's room with their dealer, and I started yelling at Slash, but he was too drunk to even argue back. A few minutes later, there was a knock on the door. It was Nikki looking dreadful, and he came in and just fell on the floor. I was thinking, great, now I have two drunks to deal with. But then the dealer came in, took one look at Nikki, and yelled, "Nikki's dead," and ran off. He literally jumped out of the window and over the balcony and ran off down the street.
Slash. Then the next thing, Sally was screaming because Nikki was rolled up and blue in the corner.
Sally McLaughlin. Slash was paralytic and Nikki was turning blue. Steven helped me drag Nikki into the bathroom, then ran off, so I was left on my own with him. I tried to get Nikki into the shower to pour water on him, but then Slash came in, saw Nikki, and started freaking out. Slash had a friend named Todd who had died of a heroin overdose a few months earlier, so he started yelling Todd and smashing up the bathroom. By now, I was giving Nikki mouth-to-mouth resuscitation over the bath while trying to hold Slash back with one hand. Slash smashed the shower screen, and the glass showered over me and Nikki, so I got up and I punched Slash and laid him out. I was screaming for someone to call 911, which they did, and said, "Nikki Six is dead." I later found out that Nikki's limo driver heard that and phoned Vince Neil.
Vince Neil. I got two phone calls saying Nikki was dead. One from the limo driver and one from our tour manager, Rich Fisher. Maybe deep down, I knew it was going to happen one day, but it still tore me to pieces because I loved Nikki. Even though he was an arrogant, selfish shit, I cried. And I never used to cry then.
Slash. Then paramedics were there, but I was so drunk I'd passed out. When I came around, the first thing I noticed was that for some reason I destroyed the fucking bathroom. Sally was freaking out at the influx of people in white uniforms taking Nikki away.
Sally McLaughlin. The paramedics came pretty quickly and took over from there. I was still giving Nikki mouth to mouth, and the weird thing I remember is that when my breath came back out of his mouth, it sounded like he was snoring. I thought, fuck, what if he's just asleep, wakes up and thinks I'm snogging him? The paramedics ripped off Nikki's t-shirt to give him adrenaline, then whisked him off. I hadn't managed to bring him around, but the paramedics later said that I kept him going. After they had taken him away, the police moved us into Steven's room. We had to carry Slash in. He was still passed out. The police questioned us all and checked the other room. Then later, when I went back in, I found a bag of dope on the floor and a vial of coke on the table. They had just missed it.
Tommy Lee.
I got a phone call in the middle of the night from Slash. He said, dude, don't freak out, but Nikki's in an ambulance on the way to the hospital. Slash said that they had done everything they could to wake him up, put him in the bathtub, splashed his face, pounded on his heart, but nothing they had done had worked. I thought, oh, fuck.
Karen Dumont. Doug Feeler called me at 3 a.m. to ask if Nikki was home. He said a limo driver had called Vince and said that paramedics had pronounced Nikki dead at Franklin Plaza and taken him away in an ambulance. I began frantically calling hospitals, but couldn't find him anywhere.
Slash. He was in and out of operating rooms all night. His management came down later and yelled at me as a horrible influence. But the truth was that I was 70% oblivious to what was going on. To me, it wasn't a big deal. I used to do it all the time.
I came to in a hospital bed. There was a cop asking me questions, so I told him to go fuck himself. I ripped out my tubes and staggered in just my leather pants to the parking lot, where two teenage girls were sitting crying around a candle. They had just heard on the radio that I was dead and looked kind of surprised to see me. The girls had this little Mazda and gave me a lift home as we listened to my obituary on the radio. One of them gave me her jacket, and they made me promise to never do drugs again. Karen opened the door for me. I went straight to my answering machine and changed my message, so it said, hey, it's Nikki, I'm not here because I'm dead. As soon as Karen had left for work, I went straight to my bedroom, shot up, and passed out.
Karen Dumont. At 5:45 a.m., there was a knock at the door, and I opened it to see Nikki standing there shivering like crazy. He was missing his boots and shirt, plus he was wearing what looked like a little girl's jacket that was so tight across his back that his shoulders were heaved up. He just said that he couldn't find his key. The next day, I went to get his boots and give Slash and the guns a piece of my mind. Sally told me that the ambulance guys had been going to give up on Nikki, but a couple of girls had hysterically begged them to try again, and that's when they had managed to bring him back.
12 noon. I just woke up. My body hurts like it's never hurt before. I'm hungry. I'm dirty. I want to take a shower. I need to return some of these messages. When I came in last night, I changed my message to, hi, I'm not here because I'm dead. I need to change that. All my messages from everybody are saying things like, you're an asshole, or that's not funny, or what's wrong with you? Nikki, are you okay in your head, dude? That's fucked. For the first time, I agree with all of them, and I don't think it's funny either. Maybe a little. One last thing. I might as well admit it now. I'm done with drugs. I'm done with being unhappy. I'm done trying to kill myself. I woke up this morning with the needle still in my arm and blood in my hand. How sick am I that I came home and shot after I died? But more important, I threw all my rigs away. I'm sick of being a selfish, egotistical, self-hating, alcoholic junkie.
Karen Dumont. Only later did I find out that Nikki had shot up again when he went to bed. We had a very proper relationship, or otherwise I would have gone into his bedroom to make sure he was sleeping before I left for work. He was clearly shaken and should not have been left alone, but I just didn't really know any better.
5 p.m. I told Karen I'm done with drugs. She said she hoped so, but looked like she didn't believe me. I think it will take a while for people to believe me. Shit, I don't know if I believe me. 6:25 p.m. I'm so tired. I need sleep. I feel like I haven't slept in years. It's the only way to explain how tired I am. You know, I feel like maybe coming undone isn't such a bad thing after all. I found my AA book under my bed when I was clearing away all my drugs. I read this. It makes sense to me for the first time. Step 1. We admitted that we were powerless and that our lives had become unmanageable.
Deanna Richards. When I heard Nikki had nearly died, it was not unexpected because it had been what I had always feared but prayed would never happen. I was so terrified he was going to die without anything being resolved, without him finally realizing just how much I loved him.
Mick Mars, when I heard Nikki was dead, my first reaction was, I knew that fucking prick was going to do something like that.
Vince Neil, I have to say there have always been rumors about people in Motley Crue dying. We used to get loads of crank calls. I even got a call a couple of weeks ago saying that Tommy had died, and that was from my own mother.
December 25th, 1987, Christmas morning, Van Nuys, 9:30 a.m. Good morning and Merry Christmas. I've decided to put this diary away and start a new one. With a new day upon us, I feel hopeful. Life, I think, has somehow taken a turn for the better. I don't know how I survived the last year, but I know there has to be a reason. Today, for the first time ever, I don't care about the outcomes for the whys and the wins. I just want to live. I woke up happy. I can't believe it. I didn't wake up with my head screaming and my instincts telling me to run and hide inside a needle or inside a coffin, whichever came first. As long as I became numb, or better yet, dead. I want to live, and I don't know why. Hey, why ask why? I'm going to wake up Karen and tell her Merry Christmas. I think I'll even call the guys in the band. Merry Christmas. I'll never forget waking up after sleeping for 48 hours and feeling so different. I knew something had happened to me, but I wasn't ready to look into it. What I experienced was, I believe, something spiritual. Drugs had brought me to my knees, and I knew it. Even though it would take a few more attempts, I was going to get off drugs. I'd been given another chance to live, and I was going to grab life by the back of its neck and shake the hell out of it. I've lived my life to the max ever since. Yes, I've fallen a few times, but I always get back up. I always say I wouldn't have wanted to know that guy back then, and neither would you.
Karen Dumont. After he died, Nikki didn't want to do anything at Christmas, but I invited a couple of my friends over. I said, I don't want to sit here miserable even if you do. I went out on Christmas Eve and bought food and a tree, which one of the guys from Rat helped me decorate. Then Nikki decided it was a good idea after all and invited Slash over. Sally McLaughlin. On Christmas Day, Slash and I went to Nikki's in a limo with all the presents we'd bought. I remember Nikki gave Slash a moleskin hat. Slash and I spent the night in Karen's room. Slash wet the bed again. He always used to after taking coke and drinking. He didn't want to tell Nikki, so he begged me to do it. When I did, Nikki just said, "Ah, well, at least he isn't shitting himself like I used to." I actually ended up buying Slash adult nappies, but he never wore them.
My life after death. That's not very rock and roll, is it? Not too long ago, I said to a friend, "I died once, but I'm better now." He reminds me of the humor in this from time to time. Nobody knows why we do the things we do until we're willing to peel the onion and get to the core of all our bullshit. I found out a lot about myself when I was finally ready to do so. Not all bad, by the way. One of the gifts I've been given in sobriety is the ability to see through other people's bullshit. Nobody knows a bullshitter like another bullshitter, but I'm better now. I'm not at the end yet. Hell, I might only be halfway there. There's plenty of time for grave markers and eulogies later. There I go, laughing at death again. I'm like a man on a bed of nails. I may grimace in pain, but I somehow find it in me to laugh at the irony of where I lay my head. Yet, there is frustration. It comes not from the puncture wounds, but from the fact that I haven't made the Guinness Book of World Records for my life yet. Like I say, I'm only halfway there. The first half was an enormous roller coaster ride through hell. I can only imagine what the second half of my life is going to be like. Okay, enough of me and my rambling. Let me bring you up to speed so far. I'll try and give you a sort of recap of the insanity and beauty that came after December 25th, 1987. Canceled the European tour, skipped rehab and went cold turkey, moved from the heroin house in Van Nuys to a well-concealed home in a place called Hidden Hills. Became reclusive for months at a time. I didn't even go to the grocery store and lost complete contact with reality. Wrote most of the Dr. Feelgood album. Went to a psychiatrist and told him that life on drugs was better than this. Got diagnosed as clinically depressed and chemically imbalanced, or should that be embalmed. Went on a new drug at the time called Prozac. Hired a band therapist to improve communication with the guys in the band. Met my future ex-wife. Moved to Canada to record Dr. Feelgood with Bob Rock. Stayed sober in Canada. Finished the album and moved back to L.A. Went over to Tommy and Heather's house and did a couple eight balls. Doug Thaler came over and flushed the drugs. Dr. Feelgood went number one. We went to Russia and I played my first show sober. Fired Doc McGee. Got married in Hawaii to my now ex. Gunner Six, my first son, was born. Received an American Music Award. Storm Six, my first daughter, was born. My marriage hit the rocks. I hit the drugs.
Bob Rock. I met Nikki when I produced Dr. Feelgood. He had just gotten sober for the first time. I've always known him as not normal, but sober and straight, and in that state, he's one of my best friends. I've seen him slip twice. After we finished recording Dr. Feelgood, I was in a studio with Nikki and Tommy. It was a Sunday night in Hollywood, and he and Tommy decided to have a glass of wine with dinner. I was telling them, guys, you can't do that. But Nikki said, Rockhead, one glass with dinner will be fine. Of course, after the glass came another one. Then suddenly the bottle was gone, and Nikki was on the phone with his dealer. I asked him, Nikki, what are you doing? And he said, why wait? I know where I'm going tonight, so why wait? He went to the total extreme in 10 minutes. Then the whole night just became pure pandemonium. Nikki and Tommy went to a club. There was probably only one club open on a Sunday night, but they found it. All the old dealers came out of the woodwork. There were girls, drugs, debauchery. We ended up back at the studio because I figured that was the best way to keep them out of jail. They ended up carving swastikas in the wall of A&M's studio. We had to blow out the first week of recording while Nikki went home to try to mend his marriage. The second time, we were in Vancouver doing the Karabi album. We found out that Tommy's first wife, Candace, who was a stripper, was dancing at the club, so Nikki and Tommy decided to dress up as lumberjacks to not be recognized and go see her. They put on lumberjack shirts and false mustaches, and I fell down laughing, saying, guys, there's no way you look like anything but Nikki and Tommy. They went anyway, and the next thing I knew, Nikki called me from the club saying, come down, Rockhead, we're doing Shooters. When I got there, Nikki had somehow gotten some blow as well. The next morning he woke up next to somebody he didn't know, and the biggest pile of blow he'd seen outside of Scarface on the table. He flew home that morning and never went back to Vancouver. All I could do when he was in that state was try to make sure he didn't go to jail or crazy.
Wrote some new songs for the Decade of Decadence compilation. Went to Europe with AC/DC and Metallica. Slipped on drugs. Vince quit or was fired, depending on who you ask. Motley got a new singer, John Karabi. Back to Canada to record the Motley Crue album. Can't stay sober. Marriage crashed on the rocks, but I held on so I wasn't replicating actions of my dad. Being unhappy seemed a better alternative to leaving my children fatherless, or so I thought. The Motley Crue album was released and flopped. The Motley Crue tour flopped. Decker Six, my third child, was born. Marriage was finally over. She sued me for $10 million, saying she deserved it. The court said I could keep my mansion. We agreed to joint custody, and she lost the $10 million suit in court. I met then Baywatch star and Playboy playmate Donna DeArico, sold the mansion and moved into a small rental in Malibu with my kids, Donna and her son Ryan. married Donna on December 23, 1997. John Corabi quit under pressure and Vince returned to Motley Crue.